This is Circe Olson Wessner, the Executive Director of the Museum of the American Military Family in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and this is our podcast, Together We Serve. I'm speaking with my father. It's Christmas Day, and he is remembering a Christmas long ago when he first arrived in Germany when he was stationed there in the Army. So, welcome, Dad.
Thank you, Circe.
So you said you got to Germany right around Christmas.
December 5th, 1954, I and some 15,000 other guys got off the ship in Bremerhaven, and we were all moved on to trains. It was late in the evening, it was snowing, it was cold. Most of the guys kind of resented being there, being in the Army, because we were all draftees. But I was excited about being in Germany. I'd read a lot in college about the art, the castles, the cathedrals of Europe, and I was looking on this as an opportunity and not so much being disadvantaged by being in the Army. In fact, I was grateful the Army sent me there. I didn't think I'd ever get there under any other circumstances.
So we got off the train.
Yeah, we got on the train in the evening and started for, I had no idea where. But I tried to keep awake, even though it was late at night and cold, and we were huddled under blankets, because I wanted to see what was out there. Of course, at night you don't see much, but when we'd come to a town, I'd see the town names on the station. Most of them I'd never heard of, but every once in a while there'd be one I'd remembered war correspondents commenting on from bombings or battles, and so it was an interesting ride for me.
So where were you going? To Würzburg?
Well, I didn't know where we were going. Everybody went by ship in those days in the Army, and they got off at Bremerhaven and they went to Zweibrücken, which is down in the southern southwest corner of Germany, where they were then redeployed to assignments. All of us had just come out of basic training, and we were forward observers, and we were riflemen, and we were cooks, and we were different kinds of things. So we got to Zweibrücken, and we went through what they called the processing center. And I learned that I was going to Würzburg, a city I'd never heard of, and to an assignment about which I knew nothing. So back on another train and off for another about a day and a half, because the military trains didn't have priority on the German railroads, so we spent a lot of time on the sidelines.
So you got to Würzburg in the daytime, or?
As I recall, it was the middle of the day, and off the train we were loaded onto a deuce and a half, you know, 2.5-ton truck, about a dozen of us crammed into the bed. By then it's about December 7th or 8th, and went up the mountain to Leighton Barracks.
What did the town look like at that point?
Didn't see much of it at that time, but I got to see a lot of it later on. It was still largely in ruins, but neatly stacked ruins. Würzburg had been very heavily bombed, primarily by the British, in a very controversial raid in the spring of 1945. It was a revenge raid for the Germans having bombed an unarmed city in England. So the Brits took it out on Würzburg. What made it even worse in Würzburg was the Brits had announced they would bomb Heidelberg. So Heidelberg prepared, but mid-mission the RAF decided we'll do Würzburg instead, an unarmed, unprotected university cathedral city. And they devastated the city. About 80% of it was flattened. And one of my first jobs, I'll tell you later on, was being out helping goodwill gestures, Germans continue stacking the rubble. But anyway, it was about midday when I got up to Leighton Barracks and given an orientation, cautioned about never going to Paris and never going to Munich because the hygiene in Europe isn't what it is back home. You know, the usual stuff they told us GIs. And don't smoke in public. All sorts of funny things that we were taught at that time.
So did you have friends there? Did you go as buddies?
I had friends that had been in basic training with me. There were two or three guys. One of them was a 6 feet, 5 inch former basketball player from the University of Illinois. Of course, all the NCOs jumped on him. They wanted him in the sports program. And to his credit, he said he would play if they would take me too. Well, they didn't want a 5 foot, 10 inch fast break guard, so that didn't work out quite that way. And then there were a couple other guys who'd been in basic with me, and so we kind of hung together for a day, and finally I was called to the orderly room, expecting to be assigned to an artillery unit because my MOS was forward observer. For some reason, I had scored well on the points, calling out where to shoot the artillery. So, and I'd been all the way over on the ship. I'd been told what a privileged group we were to be forward observers. Quickest trip to becoming an officer if you wanted to make a career. You know, they had all sorts of propaganda about how wonderful it was to be a forward observer. So it was my turn to go to the orderly room. I was told I would go try out for the band, which surprised me. I hadn't even thought about a band or the band. And I was informed that they'd gone through my records and had seen that I'd had experience with trombone and piano and baritone horn. And the division band is looking for musicians, and so you will try out for the band.
So how did that go?
That was interesting, too. Another deuce and a half. Down one river bank of the River Mine, across the river, and up the other bank to another barracks. And I met a young PFC named Eddie Dacko. Dacko was the I don't know what to call him at that point, but he was the first trombonist, and he was to audition me for the band. He said, "We have only two trombone players. One of them is the son of the first sergeant, and we need two more." And he asked me if I knew Lloyd Settle. I did. Lloyd had been in basic training with me. Lloyd was a music major from University of Michigan and a trombonist. He said Lloyd had just auditioned and they were going to accept him. So he handed me a trombone, asked how long it had been since I had played. I said, "Well, maybe a year." He shrugged his shoulders and said, "Play a C sharp minor scale." Very unusual for a trombonist, because a trombone, as you know, is a B-flat instrument, and we don't play many sharps, but I think Eddie was trying to trick me, but I actually played it, which surprised him. He handed me a couple pieces of sheet music, a march, and some portions of an overture, and asked me to sight read, asked me to play a couple more scales.
But now the music he handed you was in treble clef, you said.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So he was trying to trick you again,
right. Because trombonists, at least in the States and in band music, play mostly from bass clef readings. So anyway, they put me in the band. So it took a couple days to get that all organized, and I was told how lucky I was. The band always lived indoors, not out in the field, and I was assigned to a room with one other guy, so we're just two guys to a room, no KP, warm and cozy all the time. And we rehearsed. I'm trying to recall a typical schedule. We might rehearse the whole band for an hour or so in the morning, then we'd go to sectional rehearsals. Then there were always other duties of various kinds, but it wasn't an unpleasant life at all.
So you roomed with a guy named Ray Bruce.
Ray Bruce.
Who
mm-hmm.
who happens, actually, coincidentally, to live in Albuquerque now.
Now he does, yeah. And Ray and I reconnected about 2 years ago, and we still stay in touch a little bit. And I still stay in touch a little bit with Kurt Schmidt, the basketball player. But we were talking about first Christmas in Germany. So by now we're getting close to Christmas. And I don't remember the exact day, but our first sergeant, Don Berardo, an Italian immigrant, announced to the whole band to check the bulletin board for the roster for Christmas carols. They had kept a bulletin board just outside the bulletin board, really, but John had a habit of mixing up his English and his Italian, and it didn't always turn out just right. So I went down to the bulletin board and saw I would be assigned to do Christmas caroling that night. So the band had about 70 members, and in the Christmas carol group there were about 25 of us. It's more of a brass ensemble. And a couple more deuce and a halfs, and very cold, frosty night. I guess this was actually Christmas Eve. And we went a mile off the barracks and down a very beautiful residential street, stopped in front of a big house, and we played four or five carols. And while we were playing, the door opened, and the man and his wife stepped out, and they stood and listened and applauded. And it turned out that was a division commander, two-star general named Malloy. So he thanked us, and Berardo made us walk down the street a little further, and we stopped in front of another house and did the same thing. Another man and his wife, a couple kids came out. That was a Divardi commander, the division artillery commander, another two-star. So there were about three or four generals' houses we played for. It was getting cold, and actually it was freezing. Eddie Dacko had taught me to put cold cream on the slide so it wouldn't freeze. I'd been used to using oil, valve oil, but it would freeze. And same with the trumpet players. They use cold cream on their keys. So I was ready to go home. I guess everybody else in the band was ready to go home, but Berardo announced that now we're going downtown. Back on the two trucks, shivering down the hill. The barracks was way up high on the riverbank, and the main street from the barracks down to town, just almost a straight shot through residential areas till they got down to the residence palace, and it opened into a big esplanade, really quite pretty. And then downtown was right along the Main River. We stopped in front of one of the most famous Baroque houses in southern Germany, the Falken House, half-timbered Rococo, and we're told we would be playing right there in the square in front of the Falken House, which we did. And Germans gathered around, and many of them had torches. And so it was kind of like candlelight in the Rococo Marktplatz, marketplace, front of the Falken House. And one of the buildings had a little tower. It wasn't a church, but it had a tower like one you might see on a church spire. And they had a candlelight procession going up that tower that came out on top. And the candles were lit. And it was all very pretty. The Germans would applaud after each number, and they'd sing some of the carols with us. And so that was very, in spite of the cold and in spite of being in a place where the government said I had to be, I rather enjoyed it.
So were you able to talk to the Germans afterwards, or was there a friendship or camaraderie that night?
That's an interesting question, because the so-called anti-fraternization laws had been relaxed shortly before I got to Germany. You know, immediately after the war, they were very strict about who soldiers could talk to and not talk to, and the same on the German side. And probably the first 5 or 6 years of the occupation, there wasn't a lot of fraternization or German-American friendship activities, but they were evolving, and I suspect I was part of the first wing of that. So in the year or so I was with a band in Germany, we played a lot of what we called friendship concerts. And before each concert, we'd have time to mix with the audience and talk with Germans. And most of them, nearly all, would express their appreciation for what America had done and been, and how grateful they were that we were there, and they loved the band. And some of them would even buy a beer for the whole band at these concerts.
So I think that your memories of Christmas past, at least in this case, are very important for us to remember, because as the world seems to be turning against having the American presence overseas, it's good to remember a time when the American presence overseas was appreciated.
Oh, absolutely. And I have to say, I was in Europe a little over a year on that assignment, and I traveled to places like Italy and France, Holland. I guess those are the principal places I went. I was well treated, well received everywhere, and people were still talking about the war and the war years, and even on the German side. And so I had very positive feelings about the Europeans as a result of that.
Well, our time is up, and we need to cut this short, and so I wanted to say thank you very much for talking to us. This is Circe Olson Wessner, the Executive Director of the Museum of the American Military Family in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and this is our podcast, Together We Serve. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.